be correct. Join us.
At 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world, you're listening live to the Voice of the People radio on 105.3 FM in Pascagoula, Mississippi, where the outside of the UPRN, United Public Radio Network studios, have the windows open for probably the first time this summer, going into fall, going into winter. I guess it's one of the advantages of being on the Gulf Coast. I'm sure if you're in New Orleans listening to us on 107.7 FM, you probably still have your air conditioner running. So you might want to keep that going. If you're fortunate enough to be able to open your windows up and air everything out, do like we're doing today, and we are actually enjoying it. I don't have all that background stuff going on. Hopefully I'm not coming through like a box of Rice Krispies, and you are listening to the Voice of the People radio. I'm your host, Greg Miller, having a conversation for all intents and purposes, about nothing and everything all at once. And I would like to welcome my guest for this afternoon, Dr. Andy Skadberg. Andy, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here just to talk this afternoon. How you doing?
Well, just now my coffee pot is making a bunch of noise in the background, but it's good to be here, Greg. I'll mute the microphone until it stops here.
Oh, it's fine.
Okay. But I'm doing good.
Yeah, it's a different, I guess, a different neck of the woods for people that are not familiar with where you're at. It's not out of the question that you might end up having to run a snowplow sooner than later this year.
Well, my brother told me I'm up here in Rock Island, right on the Mississippi, and last night we had 31 degrees, so it was a little bit. That's pretty cold.
I know our friends in West Virginia were saying, you know, there either was a trace of snow or there's about to be snow or the threat of snow, and it's just too early for them for it to be this cold after last winter. You know, it makes us all sit and wonder about this whole global warming thing.
I'm a scientist, and I know that I got a degree in forestry, and I remember having conversations about too much CO2, but now it's called climate change, and I was talking to Desmond the other day saying, you know, our weather people are never accurate, and I said that I was going to do the best forecasting weather person in the world by just every day saying it's going to change. And climate change is inevitable. Yes, we need to be more intelligent with the things that we're contributing to the atmosphere and such, but it's not so much of treating the symptom as to maybe get on the front end and look at things like alternative energies that don't produce lots of extra stuff. But the thing is when we have CO2, more CO2, then what's going to happen is the plants are going to flourish to compensate for utilizing the CO2. So I think pretty much it's a self-balancing system. Everybody focusing on being afraid of the climate change is going to probably contribute energy to more climate change.
You know, I remember having to pick a topic out of a hat for a paper about 25 years ago, and back then we called it greenhouse gases.
Right.
We were so concerned that our automobiles, our industrial pollution and everything were contributing to this imminent demise. And then we had Al Gore come along with The Inconvenient Truth. And now it seems, Andy, that Al Gore looks like a punchline to a lot of people's jokes, because you see these internet memes, these pictures that people post, and they've got Al Gore's head superimposed on a guy with a flamethrower at the North Pole. You know, I don't know that people are actually that far off with the argument. It seems like we're stuck with solar cycles, and that's something we don't completely understand, and that also is part of our ecosystem, and I think that contributes to what we might call a reoccurring miniature ice age every now and then. It's really interesting when you look back through history and you see that during the time of Queen Elizabeth I, the rivers and everything in London froze over completely and stayed that way for an awful long time. And 500 years ago, you know, people were somewhat concerned that at that point it could be the end of the world.
Well, you know, the thing is that whatever it is going on. And, you know, in my life experience, I just kind of come to the conclusion that everything's going to work out, and there's actually something intelligent behind all of it, that even though we've been told this story that human beings are running the show, we're not running the show. I mean, no human system is telling my liver how to operate properly, much less all of the organs in my body, much less all of the systems and all of the living systems in the world. And I see it all folding together, because otherwise you and I wouldn't be able to have this conversation. So I can either trust whatever it is that designs and keeps all of this moving, or I can run around and say the sky is falling and make myself upset and not have my fun while I'm here.
You know, I guess that's a key thing for a lot of people with the issues of the day, you know, whether it's climate change or it's political unrest or it's actual war going on. we tend to occupy ourselves with all of these human events and look at our ecosystem as if, you know, we're out to destroy ourselves.
Well, and yeah, exactly. It's like, what? Is my human awareness, you know, the guy that I call Andy Statenberg that has a PhD and thinks he knows a lot, I really know nothing. But did I invent all of this life, or am I a part of it? And is the life continuing? Now, when I look at nature, which has been my greatest teacher for most of my life, I see it working in, you know, pretty much harmony. You know, I don't see the tree fighting. I don't see the plants outside attacking each other, or the birds. You know, sometimes they get in each other's business a little bit, but everything's holding together, as is the planet, as is our solar system, as is the galaxy. And when one understands through science how elaborate and perfect everything has to be to stay together, you begin to question, what is all of this lamenting about the human situation? And this is really at the core of what breath consciousness and my Reverence to Life University is. And, you know, this is coming out in all kinds of circles. I'm trying to think of the authors, the Power of Now, and the New Earth. I can't remember his name, but he just essentially says that, you know, there really is no other time than the present moment. I don't live in the future. I don't live in the past. I have gone through a series of now experiences that I call the past, but I ultimately don't live in that space. And breath consciousness puts me in the immediate now, which allows me to make the most of my experience, and by staying open and being aware and expanding my awareness and my consciousness, I can actually alter the future. You know, I came into the world and people started telling me how it operated, and I believed them for a while, and then somewhere along the line I was looking at this stuff and going, hey, this doesn't seem to be working very good. People aren't very happy. Is there maybe another way? So I began in my own experience to question my belief system and say, well, I don't have to operate from that space. I can create a new space. And slowly but surely, my reality over time has changed. You know, I used to think that I had to drink beer to be happy. Well, that really ended me up in a very unhappy place, where I was talking to police officers and judges and lawyers and stuff, and I was facing going to prison. And I went, well, this sucks. I don't want to do this. So then I said, well, maybe there's another way. And I just opened myself up to the possibility that I could stop that habit. And I did say a prayer, and I did reach out for help. And then all of a sudden, my life changed completely. And I continue to do those kinds of things. And what happens in me affects my world. And it goes for everybody.
You know, you bring up something that is a little anecdote. A friend of mine said the other night, did you know that people in advertising on television are no longer allowed to be shown, at least in the United States, actually drinking a beer during the TV commercials for beer? You know, and I had to request, you know, while I have television service, I don't subscribe to the habit of watching TV. I know that sounds a little bit strange, but we spend so much time with computers that unless it's something that's very important, we're not likely to interrupt what we're doing here in our home on a daily basis just to have the television on. For me to not notice something like that, I thought it was incredibly amusing. You know, that, you know, I wouldn't notice had I been watching the TV, you know, that they're advertising the beer, but nobody's drinking it. And I thought that was funny, because my friend said, well, you know, the reason behind that is there are people now, whatever their background and their persuasion and all their meters that they have attached to themselves, Andy, they're going to be the first ones to jump up and they're going to start screaming about how they're offended. You know, and you think about it, when we were kids, you would see people smoking cigarettes. I mean, Fred Flintstone smoked cigarettes during commercials for the cartoon. Now we have rules against product placement where, you know, the cartoon characters aren't allowed to advertise products. They're not allowed to display advertising for products that are related to a children's program during the actual program itself. So you'll see a commercial for a toy for another children's television program that's not related to the one that you're just watching with your kid. And we seem to now have this culture in America where people are wanting things to be stopped, or, you know, because they're offended.
Yeah, I see that as just insane. I mean, it's another rabbit hole. It's another digression from the fact that, you know, we have all been lambasted by all kinds of advertising and conditioning that makes it look like life is wonderful if you drink alcohol and take pharmaceutical pills. I mean, the TV stations are all owned by the pharmaceutical companies, you know, and what I see has been happening in my lifetime, I mean, I'm 54, so I've kind of seen the whole game show going on, and it just used to not be, but now there's just all kinds of new drugs and pills and stuff, and whenever you see the advertising, life is wonderful. Once you get this pill, you know, before the pill, your life sucks terribly. You're just miserable. You have elephants sitting on your chest because you can't breathe. Other kinds of just bizarre things. And then all of a sudden, as soon as this little pill, that, you know, there used to be a real stigma against drug addicts, and there still is because we're putting people in jail that smoke marijuana. But the pharmaceutical companies show us that if you take these little pills, your life's going to be awesome. And it's just the craziness of what the suggestions are going on in this box that most people's faces are glued to, and they're absorbing things that they're not even aware that's going on, all these suggestions. And then at the end of the commercial, you end up seeing about, not even the end, 45 seconds of a minute-long commercial will talk about all of the other symptoms that may occur because of you taking the pill. Now, what I see that as is another spin that they probably got another pill to treat those symptoms of the symptoms that are created by taking the first pill. And so essentially, we become experiments for chemistry for these beings or these companies, whoever they are, that think that they're winning a game by selling us a bunch of things to supposedly make our life happy. And it doesn't work. I mean, I went through drug addiction. My mother was a drug addict, but she got hers when she went to the doctor. I watched her essentially be an experiment for pharmaceuticals for most of her life, and, you know, 10, 12, I don't know how many prescriptions she had, but she was always in this state of unbalance, and then she would go to the doctor and say, oh, we need to make a little adjustment to this one pill that you're taking. And she was taking all these pills supposedly because of a disease called epilepsy. And after she died in 2004, my father told me that the doctors actually admitted that for 40 or more years of her life, they had misdiagnosed her epilepsy. Now, what I've come to understand is that she was dealing with unresolved issues related to her father drinking too much, alcoholism. And he drank too much to try to compensate for his emotional issues because he lost two of his wives to cancer. And, you know, my mom lost two mothers when she was young, which also created a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, some of that stuff got passed on to me, and then I had this tendency to want to escape too. And so I started with drugs and alcohol, and then money, and then women, and then whatever. I don't know. There's always an escape, but at the end of all this stuff, I'm going to have to deal with Andy. And that's what I've learned in 33 years, and then the best thing to learn about Andy I've gotten from Desmond Green, and it's called Breath Consciousness. And the tools that he has shared with me is this very simple book, Work to Set Death Row and Multiple Life Sentence Prisoners Free out of the prison system in Jamaica. And if it'll work for them, it'll probably work for me too.
Oh, you know, people deal with this nightmare that we're having, and really it is, to a certain degree, a collective nightmare when you're sitting in a medical provider's office and they, you know, now have television screens that are showing you advertising for the different medicines that you're not taking yet. One of them in particular that I find shocking to a certain degree is an antidepressant medication. I can't name it, but they have a cartoon and the lady is walking around, and just like in the funny papers, Andy, she's got a little cloud raining on her all the time, like over her head, you know, like this disgruntled or upset mood. And then she takes the pill, and then she becomes a happy little cartoon. Just like you said, you then end up with the 40-second diatribe of the fact that the pills can cause you to have seizures. They can cause you to, you know, do everything from commit suicide to walk around with unnecessary bleeding out of different body orifices. And, you know, it's is there really anything that's that wrong that I need to cause all of these physical problems? Even if they don't happen to everybody, it's a known fact that most drugs are only tested to produce these side effects in about one out of every 10,000 or so people. It's going to do something that's completely unexpected. You know, for example, one thing my wife will talk to people about a lot is they gave her, of all things, a cortisone injection. Now, you would think for the most part that a cortisone injection is used to alleviate some sort of joint pain or nerve discomfort. Well, you know, I unfortunately was on the side of trying it, and to be honest, I wish I hadn't, because knowing that my wife was going to have a side effect, which was actually pain caused by the cortisone injection, of course I would have told her not to take the injection at all. She went through about 3 or 4 days of agony, and it's not all that common, but and that's just one case, something that's commonly, you know, thought of as a way to alleviate pain for somebody that has had a, you know, joint replacement or needs a joint surgery, or, you know, they have a problem with one of the discs in their back or their neck. And here she has this reaction. Well, now we know not to ever have the cortisone injection again, but it just, you know, proves that point that the solution isn't a one-size-fits-all in that case. When it comes to treating things pharmaceutically, there are repercussions even for aspirin. I mean, we look at aspirin as something you or I might take for a headache, but if it's given to a child that has a fever, you could end up with Reye syndrome. So there's, you know, there's almost always a catch-22 when it comes to the pills. And I was standing around the other day talking to a pharmacy tech, because there was a problem with filling one of my wife's prescriptions, and there was a notice that was taped to the wall at the pharmacy. For people who are listening in the audience that may not have been to their pharmacy in the last couple of months, and they're going to be going in to have their prescriptions refilled. We're looking at a nightmare from the paper pushers, from the people that make the rules. There are a number of medicines that are available from the pharmaceutical companies that have a substance in them called hydrocodone. And as of the 6th, I think it is, of October, which coming up is Monday, Andy, the federal government has passed a new set of rules that says if you are prescribed anything that has this hydrocodone substance in the medicine, you have to have a new prescription from your doctor on or after the 6th of October. Otherwise, refills for this particular drug are not going to be made available at any pharmacy due to federal law. And I saw that. I said, oh, okay. And I mentioned to the pharmacy technician, you know, one of these off-the-wall statistical things, but it's something that a lot of people are dealing with on a daily basis, is that, you know, in the state of Kentucky, there's about 25% of the minors under the age of 18 are being raised by either their grandparents or their great-grandparents, because in a lot of their cases, one or both of the parents overdosed on hydrocodone medication, and they're no longer with us. In some of the cases, not only did the parents overdose from hydrocodone abuse, but also the grandparents, and the kids are actually being raised by great-grandma and great-grandpa who are in their 70s and 80s in a lot of cases. And that's just one state. That was something that came up from you know, one of the services that I subscribe to on the Internet that shows you some things that you might not catch on your regular news all the time. And it's, you know, it is attention-getting, because if that's just one state, and they try to blame it on another social condition, on poverty, and say that the people are using the hydrocodone in particular because it was accessible. Some people will blame the doctors for over-prescribing and whatnot. But you look at it and say, okay, if this is one of the poorest states in America, and it's got a 25% rate of these kids being raised by their grandparents and great-grandparents, what about the rest of the country? And you can start looking for it. And I dare to say, if you want to start researching to find a national figure, you might need to get back to me in a couple of months before you actually find a result.
Well, this is, you know, we can talk about this kind of stuff. So we're blue in the face, and that's what is happening in the most part. It's just, it's so interesting. About 3 weeks ago, I woke up early, and the song from Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon was on. The Lunatic is in my head. And again, this mental exercise experience that we've been going through, where we've gotten caught in the labyrinth of our thinking, is, you know, it's making us crazy. Now, I decided to pull the album up because it has a very special place for me. I bought the album when I was 13 and used to listen to it with my headphones in my room in Ames, Iowa. And I put it on, and the first song is Breathe. And it goes, breathe, breathe in the air. Don't be afraid to care. And then it goes on to say, run, rabbit, run, dig a hole, and when the work is done, go dig another one. Then the album goes on, and it has songs about time and money and other kinds of things. And these are all just elaborations of this mental experience that we are going through, that if you go to thinking to solve the problem, it will keep you running forever and ever. And that's why all of this is pushing us. And what it does is, when you go into the drugs, or whether they're out to get us, or the bombs are coming, or the water's poison, or climate change, all of those create a sense of angst and lack of security just like our money systems are just inherently insecure because the basis of them are the idea of scarcity. And the emotions are feelings that are inside of us, actually not emotions. The feelings that we get from our gut are telling us, hey, stop. Now, our emotions is where the mind takes control of the feelings and starts to tell us other kinds of stories are going on. And this is why Desmond Green has the most important, powerful message in my experience, because I have been led directly to it through my own life experience, that breath consciousness, being aware that because we are breathing, we are being supported absolutely without question by infinite love. And that this experience, even the insanity, even the nightmare that we think is happening, is being managed by something so vast and so beautiful that we don't have to worry about anything. So my job only is to wrap my consciousness around this idea of breath consciousness. And what does that mean? That means simply that I work to stay in my present moment, that I breathe deeply to get enough fuel to my brain, because Desmond in some of his earlier work said that the only evil, quote, evil in quotations, because there isn't an evil, because it's all love, but the only possible evil is shallow breathing. Essentially, if you were to think of you're choking somebody, and what kind of result are you going to get from their thinking or whatever they're trying to, they're going to be acting out of desperation. That is the condition of this world, because we have not been breathing adequately, because we have not been appreciating our first gift of life, which is this stuff moving in and out of my face 28,000 times a day. I have been trying to start on step two, not step one. Step one is I'm breathing. And if I appreciate and come to know my breath as my source, then I will get reverence for life, and I would never create anything to go against life, because life did not come here to Earth or any place else to destroy itself. Life, love, God, source, whatever you want to call it, wants to live, and we are part of that system, only going through an experience of evolutionary consciousness awakening, where we've been running around like chickens with our heads cut off, thinking that God is out to get us, only to come to the realization that we're only playing a game. It's like a movie here. And we're going to be so happy when collectively we begin to go, hey, guys, I think we came here to have fun and make sure everybody's fed. You know, recently I posted something on my blog about anything that we want to create that doesn't align with reverence for life is a very expensive proposition. Now, if you look at the military, if you look at the pharmaceutical and medical industry, if you look at foods that are produced with lots of processing and lots of chemicals and lots, it is such an incredible waste of energy. And all of that energy has to be supplied from somewhere. And where is that coming from? Well, it's coming from our consciousness. And if you align, and it's not that difficult, if you just follow the flow of life that is demonstrating or showing itself through the natural world, you can find the guidance for efficiency. You know, our problem with climate change, we're not going to be able to fix the climate change on the change end. We're going to fix it by contributing unbalanced effects in the beginning. Stop using fossil fuels, which are not what we think it is. stop contributing all kinds of nasty chemicals to the environment. Those are our consumer conditioning that says that I am simply, as a being here, I'm here to consume stuff. No, not at all. I am here as a light being with a soul that continues on because it is being supported by something that wants to live life more. And as a being here on Earth, I've learned over the years that I'm way, way, way more than what I was told growing up, that I'm just this biological blob of stuff, like the ape guy running around, simply trying to procreate. No, I don't think so. My greatest joys in life are to tap into this creative potentiality of my mind and to be a loving being to try to make the world a better place.
And it starts with one breath.
Absolutely.
It
starts and continues with one breath. We only live in one breath. Try to take the 40-second breath up ahead. Everybody is living on one breath. Recently, I saw something on television. It's like, oh my gosh, science has discovered that the Earth actually breathes. You know, scientists have been saying, oh, the universe is expanding and contracting. And Desmond would just laugh at that and say, well, isn't that the evidence that the universe is breathing too?
You mean the universe isn't continually expanding and we're not going to have this mass entropy and giant cooling down?
Well, that isn't that, universal climate change. You know, the funny thing is when you start to tap into this breath consciousness and you get to the right perspective, it really gets to be very humorous to look at how we have been acting. You know, we're like Chicken Little running around, you know, the sky is falling, the sky is falling, and only to find out that when the sky falls, it's actually rain. You know, I am a scientist. I've got lots of education, and I've read a lot. And science ultimately doesn't really solve or describe anything. And yet what it's been doing is proving to itself that no matter how far it looks, either outwardly or like to the skies or the cosmos or to the partial, the small, the quantum, it never really discovers anything because it always finds out there's something more to discover because they found out, well, there's something beyond even that stuff. And what I think is funny is like we're building more and more powerful telescopes and more powerful microscopes and more looking, going, we're looking for the God particle, not recognizing that we, our eyes, our awareness, our consciousness is the thing looking to try to find itself. And if you think you're going to find something other than yourself anywhere, you're kind of missing the point of your own consciousness. That we are truly the awareness of this infinite thing that came to all of the world, but especially right here, right now. It is asking me to come to appreciate myself as it. And once I realize that, and I realize that I've been giving real beautiful gifts, then it says, well, Andy, what are you going to share? Are you going to share words about hate and starvation and climate change and toxics and bombs? Or are you going to contribute love and peace and harmony? Are you going to work towards designing the new realities where every single person has a place to sleep, Nobody is hungry. Will we clean up all of the water? I mean, if we took the money being spent on the military equipment and applied that to environmental concerns and feeding the people, and I mean, some people have done some economic analysis and say that with $400 billion a year applied to those what we call as problems in the world, we could solve them all. Now, that's nothing compared to the amount of money that's being wasted on these, quote, what I said, expensive propositions. I mean, the medical industry, God, the amount of money we're pouring into all of these fancy machines that are not really solving any problems. Because in my case, I don't have a doctor. I don't want a doctor. I don't go to the pharmacy. I don't take pills. The only, quote, bad thing I might do is I like to drink coffee. But other than that, all I do is breathe deeply and consciously, try to keep a good attitude, and I walk regularly. And then I try to generate love and work towards things that make me feel good, not think about the things that I believe are going to be happening to me. Because I happen to believe that I was brought here and I'm being supported right now by a very loving, good thing that has given me this life to make the most of it.
When we look at the social conditions that could be solved by spending, you know, that amount of money, it doesn't matter if we started with the U.S. military budget, Andy, or if we went to some of the countries that are in West Africa that have been recently affected with this Ebola situation. The human system behind all of it is somewhat faulted, because where we had the most gruesome incidents of human behavior and man, you know, literally killing man over the sickness while they were, you know, trying to be helped from people, they were looking at it from a perspective of, if people are foreigners, they don't belong here. They're out to get me. And so they ended up with this reaction, which ended up with these people who are health care, you know, aid workers losing their lives in a small village that then took it upon itself to go destroy the only piece of existing infrastructure it had to the outside world, because they were afraid of the repercussions from their government, that there was going to be a reprisal because their government is supplying itself with these weapons, and they're saying that it's for defensive purposes and our neighbors are all out to get us. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a self-manifesting form of another type of disease that goes above and beyond that disease that's infecting those individual people that were sick to begin with, because they were, in fact, so worried about having their resources taken away from them that they were doing exactly what we're talking about in shallow breathing. They're worried about their resources being taken away. They're worried about someone else coming into what they look at as their area and taking control of them. If they weren't looking at themselves, they were looking at the infectious disease. They weren't wanting to comprehend that there's, you know, this thing in the environment that could be doing damage, and these people were only there to educate them and to do the best they could to share what knowledge they have and help them to avoid being sick in the first place. And what we're talking about in some sense is that same thing blown up, except dealing with it on a macro level, on a planet-wide level, where people shouldn't be worried about whether or not the neighbors next door are going to be coming in, because in their part of the world they happen to have oil, which, as you said, we probably shouldn't be using. Or they happen to be in an area, if it were the case that they had large solar arrays and it was generating electricity, and somebody just wanted to come in and say, I control access to this area of ground where all of these solar panels are at. We really aren't in control of anything with that, with those imaginary lines. Those lines, and I know if Desmond was here with us, he would say when he traveled, he didn't come across a huge purple line that all of a sudden was separating the Netherlands, where he had just come from the rest of Europe where he was going.
Yeah, look at the world, look at all the conversations, look at all the possibilities, and that's what we have been doing. We've been examining the possibilities of there being something other than love. An expansion of consciousness into a, quote, nightmare. Now, when you go into a nightmare, there's no way out by continuing with the same function or the same processes that put you into the nightmare. Einstein said it. He said, you can't solve the problem with the thinking you used when you created them. He also said that none of my discoveries, I didn't make any of my discoveries through rational thinking. Now, the interesting thing is if you look at the word rational, it's ratio, numbers, counting, drawing lines, making partitions, creating boxes. The thing is that this stuff has got us so imprisoned that we're trying to use the same systems to free ourselves, including the thinking. Well, if the thinking is infected with a virus, and that virus, I would say, would be the idea of separation, then you're not going to be able to use that program to solve the problem. Thinking's not going to solve the problem. Using my mind to become consciously aware of the physical function of my breath is what has been putting a new program in me. Now, I've been working on myself for many, many years. I realized at some level that I'm like a biocomputer. I realized that we've made computers in a way that mimics the human mind. The subconscious could be the random access memory, RAM, and the ROM is our subconscious or this greater information space, and that if my RAM is filled up with programs, that it stops operating effectively. So some time ago, I began to do things to try to look at what was running in my conscious mind and how would I get out of that. Now, I had to go through a really, really elaborate process, lots of different videos and books and things and meditations and prayers and just on and on and on. I've been working on Andy for 33 years now, only to be brought to the simple instrument that Desmond has written down. And they're three. One is called the Passport. The other is called the Practice. We also have a book called the Global Citizenship Passport, which essentially is a book about discovering that our sensory instruments, our seeing, our touch, our taste, our feeling, our hearing, they're all just different aspects of one thing, as is our thinking and our feeling. And when we become attuned to the natural guidance that is in us, we call our feeling, Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss. We have this program that's running in us that says, hey, you're thinking about the wrong thing because you're starting to feel stressed, or you're starting to feel afraid, or you're starting to feel insecure. Those feelings say, stop thinking that. Now, the trouble is, we've become so habituated to thinking into the future or the past that we get out of the now moment. So how do we get into the now moment? We become aware of our breathing. One breath at a time, because that's all that's happening. So I use my thinking mind to become conscious of my breath. And as I become conscious of my breath, which is a physical thing, I don't have to think about breathing. It's happening to me. All of a sudden, there's like an antivirus program that is being inloaded, maybe from God, source, Allah, whatever you want to call it, but from whatever makes this and keeps all of this running, has been putting a new program in me. And I can save people 33 years of effort by just saying, instead of doing all the work I did, just go study, read, and practice what Desmond's book suggests. It will save you a lot of time. It's like I used to go to meetings to stay sober, and I would see people that would be talking about them going out drinking again. And I said, well, that sounds really crappy, so I'm not going to go out and experiment with drinking again, because I can learn from their experience and apply it to my own. And it's the same thing that's going on here. This transformation, this ascension, which I would even call an incension, is a becoming aware of that my freedom is in me, in my own consciousness, becoming aware that there's nothing wrong, that I'm essentially on a river, and I call the river is made of love, and I can paddle along and enjoy the river and be aware that what has made the river and has made the earth and has made the cosmos and has made my ability to think and feel and experience life is going to continue to support me, and it's going to take me to a very beautiful place. And when I realize that in me, my whole life changes. Funny, it's captured in that little children's song, Row, Row, Row Your Boat Gently Down the Stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. And we're going somewhere. Jesus, all the great teachers, were telling us this. If you learn to trust what is making this possible for you to be alive, and you learn to trust and you love that supplies you, then you're going to be really happy. And we're coming out of the nightmare, waking up and going, oh my God, we've created our own nightmare, and we can change the story just as soon as we become aware of we don't want to keep repeating the nightmare.
And for a lot of people, they don't see a way out of their nightmare. They don't see that they are, in fact, manifesting what they're bringing to their own table every day. Just like we had said a little while ago, Buddha told the guy, hating someone else is like drinking poison and expecting the other person that you hate to die. Well, shallow breathing is like choking yourself, Andy, and expecting the other person to stop breathing.
Absolutely. And that's now the thing is, if you want to test it, try to stop breathing. We are literally being forced to deal with it. So I can either deal with it now, or I can put it off and go, when Desmond, if anybody's ever had a chance, and he's not any guru, he would never claim to be a guru, even though, in my opinion, he's maybe the wisest person in the world. He's my friend. But he will never stop off his position. He will never step off his knowing. He is so, so confident. Just last week I was talking to him, and I said, so, Desmond, if you would meet the Dalai Lama or the Pope or whatever, I guess you'd tell them the same thing about one breath. And he said, well, what else am I going to say? The thing is, the test is, first of all, we can't consciously stop breathing. So God is forcing us to go through this eye of the needle that we call breath consciousness. But then also, if you want to argue with me about the fact of the breath, here's the ultimate test. Blow all of the air out of your body and continue with your argument. And don't take another breath. You can't take another breath. Everything is dependent. This breathing thing has been so in our face. I mean, it literally, when we come into the world, the first thing we do is take a breath. The last thing we do before we leave is we let the breath out of ourselves, and then we go energetically somewhere else. And 28,000 times a day, and we're going, oh, but this is important. Oh, no, breath isn't that important. This is important. So it's always this, yeah, but thing. No, appreciate your first gift, take that, and create the life of your dream, which needs to be aligned with what Albert Schweitzer wrote about after 60 years of work called Reverence for Life. I honor life because life came here, even to this world, to live, and it will continue to live. The fear of dying, what's that threat? We all leave these bodies. So what is this illusionary threat that we're all lamenting about, people dying from diseases and bombing and stuff? Heck, when you leave the body, you leave the nightmare. So let's transform the nightmare while we're here. That's our job to do. It's very simple. Very, very, so simple it escapes us because we're caught off in the intellectual complicatedness. That has made life very interesting, but now it's just not much fun anymore.
You know, and with that, Andy, I guess we're going to catch our breath because we're going to take our break. Folks, you've been listening to your host, Greg Miller, and Dr. Andy Skadberg here on the Voice of the People radio. It's a wonderful afternoon on 107.7 FM in beautiful downtown New Orleans, Louisiana, and 105.3 FM. In Pasch Christian, Mississippi. If you have any questions for us, you can call in on 504-273-7379, and you can ask your questions, and I guarantee you one thing, if you do, you won't be wasting your breath. So stay tuned, and we'll be back after these words on United Public Radio Network.
Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
The paranormal,
ghosts,
spirits,
demons,
reincarnation,
past lives,
the afterlife,
divination,
exorcisms,
witchcraft,
the unseen.
He's psychic medium Chris George.
And he's Victor the Voice Berman.
We are Second Sight Radio. Join us live
every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time
on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host news on the flip side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our 3-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
hitting myself with a hammer, just like drinking the poison. And then I finally said, well, oh, that doesn't feel very good. I'm going to put that hammer down, and I'm going to ask for something new. And what came into my life is this guy named Desmond Green, who all he talks about is his breath. He never says bad things about anybody. He has never criticized anybody. He calls me. He has called me for 6-7 years now, daily, twice daily. He even called me when he was in Poland. And he stands positive, and he only speaks language, only speaks words of positivity and hope. He says wonderful all the time. And he's got some other books. He's got a book called Trust Your Breath, which is essentially about languages. We have lost touch with the power of the Word. I mean, this is in the Bible. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. But what happened is somewhere along the line, we got disconnected from what I think, speak, and write can be something other than what I speak, think, or write. Like if I say I'm a terrible person, and I really believe it, then that's what I get. You talked about it. It's called self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, would I want to stab other people? Would I physically stab other people with a knife? Probably not. And worse, erode them. Now, I'm not saying that I'm always aware, but I am constantly bringing myself back to this truth that, you know, my feelings are telling me if I'm going in the right direction. The program works excellently. And what I'm doing is that today, there's, in the world, there seems to be a lot of different noise. I mean, the noise has been increasing in my lifetime, but there's a lot of distractions going on. Desmond talks about the image-based versus the breath-based. The images are simply what we see with our eyes, and we become so mesmerized by the light show that we forgot that we're also feeling and touching and tasting and hearing. That's the breath-based reality. And our feelings and our thoughts are also part of that breath-based reality. And why we feel so anxious when we look at these ugly pictures is because we have to feed those pictures with our energy. And that feeding is pulling energy out of us, which creates fear. When I think, if I think something is wrong with the universe, I'm essentially saying that God got it wrong.
You know, and one of the things that you're touching on right now, Andy, is that you are manifesting. And we know that there is a larger community that listens to not only Voice of the People, but a lot of programming, which has become available both on the terrestrial radio and online, talking about manifesting the things that you want. And we're again, not going to be critical of that, because that is an effective process. The process actually works. But if you are also spending so much time and energy trying to, whether you picture it mentally and just simply manifest the things you want, but you're not paying attention to what you are at the same time, then your consciousness is missing out on the entire experience, and you might as well be like the little lab rat that's in the maze running around hoping eventually to stumble across a piece of cheese, because we're living in a world where the puzzle has been constructed around us and it is constantly being reconfigured to keep you focused on just stumbling across that piece of cheese. Eventually you're going to find it and you're going to be happy. And pay attention to who you are while you're trying to manifest it. Otherwise, you're gonna miss out. You could probably focus so much on the process of manifestation that you will think that you did not succeed, and then you could end up with this power to manifest negativity back into your life, and that's absolutely something we don't want people to do.
Today we're going to give you some tips
Yeah, it can be a very elusive process. I mean, wanting, when I want something, I'm yearning for something that I believe I don't have. When I want, I get more want of the thing.
Feel it?
Did you what?
You know the game's on tonight, right, Amy?
I know, but it's my turn to chaperone.
Right, but you can do both.
Oh.
NFL Mobile is now free with the More Everything plan from Verizon.
I have Verizon.
Download it, and you can watch the game right here.
Come on, Miss Boogie!
Oh, Helen.
Watch primetime NFL games on NFL Mobile, included with the More Everything plan, exclusively from Verizon.
What I realize is that the only solution to any of our ills in the world is to love more. I think that that's what Jesus was sharing with us, is that, you know, when somebody gets in your face, what's going to stop the hatred? Well, that's me stopping drinking my poison. And so chasing the different pieces, and what the universe is a candy store. And what my brother and I, who's a few years older than me, were talking about, it's like the game we've been playing is you're in a candy store, but you don't get to eat. All of the money stuff that says that only a few get money, and the few that get the money, they're the ones winning the game. No, it's not that way at all. The difficult people in my life, the challenging situations are the things that are teaching me to love even that. You know, that's the interesting, magical thing about this experience is, you know, if I think that I'm going to hate that being that is actually being the catalyst for us to get love on this level, that we need to transform this world. You know, the people that have created supposedly the most horrendous images that we're trying to eat and digest are only trying to show us our own worst fears and reflect that back. So then we can digest that and say, okay, that's just a part of me. And as I quit hitting myself with a hammer because I still have these negative feelings inside of me, I just put the hammer down and know that whatever it is that's running the show is taking care of me too. Taking care of the whole world, taking care of the whole cosmos. And to keep it very simple, it's just this breath constant. I mean, Desmond has been bringing me back to this on a daily basis because he already exists in that space. And this is what we have in the world. We have people that just kind of need stuff. Like Jesus just knew stuff. And he tried to share it. And we didn't quite get it, but he prepared the garden. And here we are at this stage of our life where we've really run the crazy, crazy, insane games, only to find out that the only thing that satiates us is to love ourselves and love everybody else and love God. And that's what Jesus said. But if I secretly loathe myself or think myself as a bad person, or think that there's something wrong with anything that God made, I'm mistaken. You know, I've had a challenging life at some level, and every time that I was just like,
you feel it?
Did
what?
You
know the game's on tonight, right, Amy?
I know, but it's my turn to chaperone.
Right, but you can do both.
Oh.
NFL Mobile now.
Myself free.
Free with the More Everything plan from Verizon.
I have Verizon.
Download it, and you can watch the game right here.
Come on, Miss Boogie!
Oh, Helen.
Even though I'm not physically with them, even though I think they hurt me, that's what it meant when Jesus said, turn the other cheek. So it's a wonderful time to be alive. It's just unbelievable to be a human being at this stage because we're going through something so profound. And the whole cosmos, Desmond says, and I believe this too, that all of the spirit that is in all of this is waiting for us to transmute this human nightmare we've been talking so much about.
And we stop, Andy, and we take a deep conscious breath and look at life and wonder, you know, what about life beyond Earth and its consciousness? And I know for some people that's like an intellectual exercise, but when we look at systems and we begin to know more through physical evidence, we see that the very star that we orbit around has a breathing process to it. It's just for years we didn't understand it. We might call it something like solar maximums and sunspots. And,
well,
you know.
Yeah, the idea of other worlds with other beings on it. I mean, as more and more people are opening up to these possibilities. But, I mean, think about it. If our level of consciousness is where we're still our quote authority, our government, believes the only solution to a problem in another place is to go drop bombs in them, no wonder we're not traveling around the cosmos. We're not, we're keeping ourselves in a cage, which makes it so they don't have to make a cage for us. And what we have to do is we want to experience and know all of these other possibilities, then we have to learn to be one with our entire family here on the earth. Like, I'm not separated from the trees out there that are breathing. I'm not separated from, there's no lines of separation between the energies that we're sharing. We all are breathing the same breath. You know, it's so funny. Why haven't we come up with ways to draw lines between where your breath ends and mine starts? Because it's not possible. but we have to get past this stage of where I can lie to you and win the game. I have to first lie to myself. And how could I win my game with myself by lying to myself and then lying to you? There's only one thing, and its intention is to discover that it doesn't lie. But we are new beings that are going through this experience that expanded a space that said that killing each other was possible, that poisoning our planet was possible. It's only, you know, there's a very powerful being, Paramahansa Yogananda, who wrote a book, Autobiography of a Yogi, that in the last days of his life, he's saying, this is just a movie. And I say it's like a movie video game, but we're literally the creators of it. You know, I take a breath in, it fuels my consciousness in this physical body, and I am projecting this universe that I call my life out of me so I can walk through it. Without me as part of the picture, there is no universe. I shared this quote some time ago. And if you understand what the idea of infinite, it is infinite. There are no gaps, there's no spaces, there's no missing or extra parts. So there's no way to get outside of the infinite love that we are. So what supports us is love that has decided to create a new kind of experience for itself so it could expand its experience. And we've been thinking that we're separated from our God, that God has forgotten us, that God doesn't love us, only to find out that it was just an illusion. You know, the thing I used to say, and I don't know why I said this as a kid, but when I think I have pain, and then I finally let go of the pain, when I drop the hammer, it feels really good. I would say, I like to hit my head against the wall because it feels so good when I stop. Or if I got to go to the bathroom, it will pee. And I'm holding it, and I have to hold it because I'm in a public place and I can't quite go. But when I finally get to go, oh my gosh, the longer I hold it, the better, more pleasurable it feels. So when we all stop dropping bombs on each other and we start to feed all the people, we are going to be so elated, so happy. When I allow the idea of God creating suffering when I allow that to leave my consciousness and only go, oh my God, I'm breathing, so it's all love, no matter what my interpretation is, then I can live in bliss. Now, I'm still human. Sometimes I run off with thoughts. You know, my wife will attest to this. Sometimes I go crazy still with sharing a collective energetic soup, and there's a lot of craziness in the world. If you don't believe me, turn on the TV. Bombs will not solve our problems.
They definitely only do one thing, and that is create problems. They either create destruction wherever they're used, or they create another thing, Andy, which is worry over using them.
Right.
They also create a sense of guilt after they're used. So we really don't need that. As a race, humanity has to eventually kick the guilt habit.
Well, now this is another thing that Desmond, that's a little bit elusive, but he talked about accusational theology and psychology. And this is this idea of judging or pointing my finger, trying to find blame. And I've known this for a long time because I've had to process it with my own parents, is that if I blame my parents for my issues when I was, whatever, drinking too much, or I was stupid or whatever, I have to blame their parents, and then their parents, and then their parents. And the end is, I got to blame God. Well, that doesn't go very far. It's like, okay. I have something else that I'd like to read here that I pulled up on my blog, too, because I think it relates to this. I entitled, Our Spiritual Soul Growth. Who does it? Who is going to do your spiritual soul growth work for you if you don't? We're not just pinballs in a pinball machine. Of course, there is growth that will occur naturally from random experience. However, if one ruminates on the process, occurrences, and contributing factors, and the subsequent learning to be digesting, one will find themselves in the most phenomenal school environment. Between the physical and the spiritual, not two, but one, blended, base, breath-based reality, one can find an everlasting adventure space within oneself. Each person is a self-contained cosmos, each representing a diverse aspect of the perfect love from which all come, an eternal avenue for creation, life to discover new aspects, new truths, new perspectives, all contained within each person. These are only discovered through effort to discover and digest, living life as a habit. A repetitive, simply physical exercise will not reveal what and who we are. Thinking was created to do this, not to try to figure things out. There is no figuring things out, as everything is happening in. Languaging, processing, contemplating, digesting. These are a few of the tools at our disposal. Repeating the same phrases, thoughts, actions will only disguise life. Life is emergent, active, expansive. Invest some time in the wonder that you are. Okay.
Oh, you know, we talk about investing our time in what we are, and we are really one breath at a time creating that person. So there's not anybody that's listening to us this afternoon, Andy, that can't. We'll use some of the catchphrases. Turn things around. Make things better. Make something happen. Those are all positive affirmations. And when you let go of that accusatory theology and that philosophy that, you know, basically, no matter how you label it, says that the universe is out to get Andy Skadberg, the only thing that you're left with is your choice of what you're going to manifest and create with that next breath. I mean, you could, for all intents and purposes, just stay in one place and sit there and wait for breath to run out. but we really don't want people to look at life that way. When people quantify 28,000 times a day of gas moving in and out of their face, and and they start to worry about when the last breath is coming, they're basically stealing from themselves the opportunity to make something out of the breath that's coming next. So if you don't want your neighbor to steal something that you own, you know, you go to any means necessary to protect your things that you have from that. Why wouldn't you go to any means necessary to protect yourself from losing that ability to create with that next breath, instead of giving that energy over to worrying about the last one, instead of giving that energy over to digging that next hole as the rabbit and then having to dig another hole?
Well, it's interesting, because this is where the intellect really has a hard time to grasp it. This is why the practice is literally a physical, like bringing my awareness to my breathing and appreciating it and feeling that and noticing, playing with it. You know, I don't have to protect my breath. I mean, it's like in my face. And this is maybe why it's been so elusive for me. But to protect and go, oh my gosh, this is my most valuable asset. What am I using it for? What life am I seeking? What life am I thinking? What am I using this? I call it my infinite endowment. What is my attention going to? What am I focusing on? If I'm repeating the same story that I see on the TV or hear somebody else, am I defending myself to an argument that is a no-win game? to go back and discuss and to try to convince people out of their whatever is only to waste my energy and actually feed their story, which is not my story. My story is next breakfast. I'm going to share something that is what I am doing these days. As often as I can remember, I am repeating these thoughts, the phrase in my mind, I am my breath. I am my breath. I go to sleep at night and I remind myself, and I wake up sometimes and I realize I'm still repeating, because this is how tight this needle, the eye of the needle is. This is so revolutionary to our worldly thinking of things. That's why it's such a squeeze. But if I'm going to do my part, which is only to deal with this guy, Andy Stadler's consciousness, this is what I'm literally doing. Now, sometimes they say, I am my conscious, cosmic, sweet, physical, spiritual breath of absolute abundance now and exponential potential forever. And I play with those kinds of affirmations, which is launching my breath into the potentialities that I want to experience. I want to experience heaven on earth. That's what I want. And the only way that I know to do that is to first appreciate my breath, and then to speak and love of harmony, and additionally write and work for it. And you know, you could go to any of my 6 websites, and I've been obsessively working and writing about how to fix things. Because that's also what I do. I'm a bridge builder. And I have a whole bunch of stuff around tourism and entrepreneurship and economic development and environmental consideration, blah, 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 blah. It's all there. But the first thing that I got to do if I want to see those things is to stick with me and then share the best I can. And that's all I can do. And everybody has access for free. The old saying, the best things in life are free, is absolutely the truth, because love is free. My consciousness is free. This body was free, except the doctors charged something. My breath is free. the universe to be able to see. I'm not paying to look at the stars and the trees. I don't have to pay to go enjoy the tree or to lay in the grass or to hug my daughter. Where did we get lost in this idea that the only things that are worth anything are you have to pay for them? That's crazy. In fact, it's actually gone the opposite direction, almost a devaluing of the truth of who we are. And it's time to stop it.
So,
I stop it by stopping it in me and saying, this is my new reality.
You know, Andy, we are having thousands of people enjoy this conversation with us on the Internet. Everybody has sort of been obsessed the last few years with applications. You know, that, there's an app for that. You know, I'd like to be able to do this or that using my smartphone. Oh, there's an app for that. Human ingenuity leads us to take this toy and then create things with it that we can then have an app for that. But when you get down to the bare bones of things, there's no app that I could have on my cell phone, on my tablet, on my computer that I could access using Wi-Fi somewhere that's going to allow me to just kick off my shoes and walk out into my backyard with my feet in the grass. And that's free.
Absolutely, and that's just part of it. Go dig your fingers in the dirt, or go hug a tree, or go stand out in the sun and feel the rays and feel the breath moving in you. I mean, it's just the human experience, when we go beyond just all these pictures we're going, the pictures are like attacking us now. They're attacking us because we see them and we're trying to satiate ourselves by like simplifying our whole existence to just a bunch of pictures. I cannot eat an image. It will not satisfy my hunger in my stomach. Nor would I really want to, but that's kind of what the game we've been playing. We're so obsessed with the image-based reality, it's got us really distracted. But the thing is it's not so difficult as we might think. And, you know, I think it's mostly just a shifting a little bit.
Good news,
you know,
boy. I use the 2%
cash
back I get with the Spartan cash card on tickets to tonight's Jaguars
card,
game.
Bottom of the
outstanding! Jaguars! Yeah! I'm taking
for
the
them
clients.
To run right, there's a timing that has to occur. Essentially, you got a 360-degree.
Hundreds of thousands of Americans are facing a Tuesday deadline to provide the government with income information or risk losing their health insurance subsidies. With more on this, we're joined by WSJ reporter Stephanie Armour. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for being with us.
Hi.
So how much for having me? Absolutely. So how many Americans are we talking about here, and what's the risk if they miss the deadline?
Like the 1%.
It's potentially a large number. There's about 300,000 people who have until Tuesday to provide documentation that shows their income, or else they could lose subsidies or part of their subsidies. And there's another 115,000 people who already missed the deadline to turn in their documentation about showing they're legally entitled to be in the United States, and those individuals will start losing coverage on Tuesday. Can you explain the confusion here? Why did so many people get the subsidies if they weren't eligible for them? Exactly. Well, people were asked when they signed up on healthcare.gov to estimate their income for 2014, and then checked against 2012 tax records. In a number of cases, there's inconsistencies, the income doesn't quite match up, and in those cases, there's real concern among advocacy and policy members that people may have potentially been getting more subsidies than they're entitled to and could have to pay some or all of it back in tax time. So how much does changes in reporting income and getting health subsidies impact next year's tax season?
And it's working.
Basically, people may have to pay back, in some cases, thousands of dollars because they got incorrect subsidy amounts. The IRS basically says you don't have to pay all of it back. It depends on your income level. There's some cases where you would have to pay it all back. And this also doesn't include the individuals who had income or other inconsistencies in some states that set up their own exchanges. California in and of itself sent out letters
to
more than 200,000 people saying they have some income inconsistencies that could come up and snare them at tax time.
Out.
It certainly sounds like a bitter pill to swallow for a lot of people.
important thing for us.
Foreseeing a difficult tax filing season due to confusion over these
subsidies? To wife, I
it's a
demand
good question. Yes, yes.
That next
a number
breath,
of people say, look, people really count on these refunds. They use them for
it's just
their Christmas
sort of
presents for paying off charge accounts. Instead, they may
say,
be very surprised to find out that they have to write that check to
for?
Uncle Sam or not get their full
if
refund
If you
back.
Look at something
any
that
chance
somebody
that the government
else
is
going to
be a little lenient
and you
this year
spend
since
your time
it's all very new?
Criticizing it and saying,
I
you know, I'm
really
offended?
I don't think so. I think really the government is trying to get these inconsistencies cleared up as best they can before the next enrollment season, which starts November 15th. So that's why they're being
because
pretty stiff about these deadlines, but they're doing
the
a lot of outreach, a lot of letters,
to
trying to let people know that they need to get these documents in. But keep in mind, this can even
because
affect
they
people
were
who
negativity
not
when
get
they,
these letters, but simply had a change
did
in income and didn't go online
to
update
place.
It during the year. All right, Stephanie,
so,
thank
you know,
so much.
Multiplying a negative action with more negative actions is never going to bring anything positive into your life. I think that's a lesson that Desmond doesn't try to teach anybody that speaks with him about our breath consciousness, in that it's something you eventually not only learn, but know and then put into practice, Andy, because
no
you
feelings.
Could do the okay. most awful thing. And my sitting there and screaming at the top of my lungs isn't
going to
be the thing that changes your behavior and that you're going to do it again.
The city's downtown business district filled with thousands chanting democracy in Hong Kong, peaceful disobedience.
The world says
in a video address released Saturday,
there's a lot of worry about money.
Executive called for an end to the protest.
This is a pretty elaborate game that we've created where essentially somebody else kind of starts to tell us how we can live our lives. And it's not possible that all I'm supposed to do comes from within me and to trust that that thing that is guiding me is going to bring me my greatest abundance and freedom and whatever. And it's been a challenge for me to leave.
Here on the coast, we don't believe in bragging. Our mamas and daddies, well, they taught us better. Maybe that's why at Hancock Bank, it's not about being bigger or older. It's about being part of the community. It's about taking pride in what we've accomplished and all we have yet to become. Hancock Bank, our hearts on the coast.
Lamenting. I start to tell him about how difficult I have, and then I, you know, because the people that I love, sometimes I get pulled in and I start to look into the future of the past, and I start to think, well, it looks like it's not working out, and I start to talk about it. And he never says anything.
When
he
returned to Haiti in 2011,
he doesn't contribute charity to my lamenting. He doesn't contribute and go, oh, Andy, I'm so sorry. Now, sometimes he says, well, let me see what I can do. But most of the time, he listens and he absorbs.
Jean-Claude was the son of François Papadakis Valier, the medical doctor turned dictator who ruled over Haiti until his death in 1970.
We have people in our lives that are going through physical health issues. And I can kind of see that these people are looking for attention. They're looking for sympathy. And for me to give them that sympathy is to feed their further getting ill. Now, it may be that these people have to leave this world because they're not in a position to receive or change their life because they've been so habituated into a certain way of being. But my throwing fuel on a fire...
Here on the coast, we don't believe in bragging. Our mamas and daddies, well, they taught us better. Maybe that's why at Hancock Bank, it's not about being bigger or older. It's about being part of the community. It's about taking pride in what we've accomplished and all we have yet to become. Hancock Bank, our hearts on the coast.
Daimler and Renault have been cooperating on the development of small cars and small car technology for a couple of years now.
They said they're going to save even more money from that partnership. That's good news for investors, good news for shareholders, given how expensive it is to develop new cars and new technology. There is danger all the same in alliances like this. If two companies with such different brands as Daimler and Renault start making cars that are more or less the same, won't customers notice? The revamped Renault Twingo is a four-door compact city car that you can order in a variety of bright colors. Daimler's new smart car is a four-door compact city car which you can order in a variety of bright colors. For a casual observer, it may be pretty hard to spot the difference. The truth is, this is a risk the two companies are willing to take. Daimler, after all, needs Renault's help in making small cars, and Renault certainly needs Daimler's help in making luxury cars.
And we've
heard that over
400
million vacation days go unused every year. That's the
stupidest thing
I've ever heard.
Human evolution.
Paid vacation days.
You know, Andy, you've brought up something that is very, very valid. And that for a person who's wanting to clear physical illness from themselves, to cope better with having the rest of the world tell them they've been diagnosed with a mental illness or a disorder, to bring healing into their lives, be it psychologically or physically, because it really isn't a distinction between the first step in that whole process is appreciating
the Toyota iRoad concept made its European debut at the Paris Auto Show this week. With two wheels at the front allowing motorcycle-like cornering and one at the back, the battery-powered one-seater iRoad can reach up to 30 miles per hour and go on for 31 miles with a full charge.
It's a tiny vehicle, just over 7 feet long and 4.7 feet high. So tall people may struggle a bit.
The healing potential that is there. Again, you are robbing yourself of the ability to create
but will it catch on?
Well, the super light three-wheeled urban mobility concept has been tried before,
difficult,
with limited success.
When we hear stories
remember
of
the Reliant Robin?
It
was a pioneering British three-wheeler that did spend nearly 30 years in production until the last one rolled off the assembly line in 2001.
Had a heart problem
this hasn't stopped it remaining the butt of jokes from auto enthusiasts
or,
as a
you know,
slow, prone to flip, noisy, not really a car phenomenon. Then there's Renault Twizy. It is essentially a four-wheeled electric scooter which seems to combine none of the advantages of a car, protecting the driver from the elements, room for passengers and luggage, nor a scooter, able to dodge between the traffic that's increasingly the challenge facing motorists in car club cities around the world.
The roads are still dominated by two or four-wheeled vehicles, but maybe, just maybe, there might be room for three wheels too.
It's not just a couple of words that are being strung together. It's something that you can give yourself the opportunity
to take ownership
of. The
world made more sense. Now it's crazy.
That next breath, because that's the
I'm saving
thing
less.
Own.
Things cost
it's
more.
Not,
and who knows what will happen
next. Shoes that are on your
that's
feet.
Why I signed
yes,
up for
you might go into the temple.
To protect
and to
my
venerate
income,
the temple,
health,
you have to leave your shoes on the outside of the temple.
And does that
and
make me
the
feel like things are under control?
Has programmed people,
yeah,
you then
a
end
bit
up with street children that come
in
along and steal your shoes.
20 million people rely
and
on
come
benefits
out of the
from
temple,
Unum.
And
Unum,
the first
better
thing
benefits
that
at work.
In that case, oh my God, what happened
hello,
to my
I'm
shoes?
Hello, I'm Lee Hawkins.
My
you
shoes
think
are
Harvard
gone. Well, you have just
you
changed your focus
of the
away from that spiritual experience at the temple to worrying about how you're going to replace the shoes. And the shoes weren't the thing that got you to the temple in the first
some
place.
Big buzz on the internet this week as the focus of a Harvard business case study was released by Harvard professor Anita Ellersbee and her former website.
There's a book called
Trust
the Best Investment, which is about languaging. There's also a
last December when she released her studio album on iTunes
talks about the benefits of physical, literal, physical,
the release
scientifically
of
proven benefits
debuting
of
as number one on the Billboard 200,
the
of
consciousness
selling
was,
a million copies.
And this is what I played with this
the
stuff
study
over
shows
the last
some of
7 years.
Beyonce's day-to-day dealings
my lungs
as the CEO
literally
of her company, Parkwood Entertainment. A side that the public rarely sees.
And my heart
it also discusses
feeding
the savvy of Parkwood Entertainment's general
and I only have
manager,
one heart.
Leanne
I have two eyes,
Longo,
so that's the duality
in me.
But I have one consciousness, I have one breath, I have one heart. And that is the reminder that there's actually only one thing really clear going on. We're coming out of
the
duality consciousness drawing mainly from the years of hit making.
Remembering
in the music
that we are
industry,
one with the one because there's no way to be outside
those who
take
of the biggest business risk and who constantly evolve. I've read
and Andy,
the 27-page study, which impressed
come down
me
to that last minute
inside
again. We
Beyonce's day-to-day
up
business
to the wall.
Life. Among the highlights,
the wall
in
is,
August
of course,
2013,
folks, only
with
imaginary.
Her album near completion, Beyonce
I want to thank you, Andy, for sitting on top of the wall with me. We're not going
to
be like Humpty Dumpty and fall
she
off and all the king's horses and all the king's men
the study also
can't put us back together again, right? Have you ever thought about that really deeply and imagined a horse trying to put an egg back together?
I knew it would solve the issue of leaks if we did not have to print physical copies ahead of the launch
instead of
date.
Deriving, you know, what the purpose of the egg was in the first place, you know. Of course, Humpty Dumpty would disagree with us and
through a
you
worldwide
take that,
launch,
you know,
to knew
mean
that
he was doomed.
Beyonce's music and videos to
thankfully,
of fans
we're not.
And
I'd like to take the moment to show you my appreciation once again for hanging out with me and remind everybody that they can go to ReverenceForLifeUniversity.com and they can pick up on
the
practice. They can pick up a copy of
Passport
to a Healthy Lifestyle. They can pick up the Global Citizenship Passport by Desmond Green. They can also pick up Trust Your Breath, which was the last book that you had mentioned too, which talks about our vocabulary. Unfortunately, those words in my vocabulary, as host of voice people, deem me to have to say that we are out of time. And Andy, if you'd like to give people that blog address, then go check out the writing that you did.
For help
instead of
planning
having
your one more day, contact MasterCard Concierge Services or download our new app.
13, number 13, right, messages.blogspot.com.
This is the 10,000.
And folks, we also have a short
link
that's set up for Andy. Hopefully it's still
rural,
working. You can even type in 13light.tk, and that should take you over to Andy's blog as well. Hopefully that's all still up and running. The rest of the internet hasn't fallen apart. We're not falling apart. And thank you, Andy, for joining me, Voice of the People Radio. Without you, the listening audience, there is no Voice of the People Radio program. Please do stay tuned, folks, because you won't want to miss what is going on in the world with News on the Flip Side, co-hosted by Joe Montalvo and Stephanie Benetti out of New York City and New Orleans, Louisiana, respectively, along with all of the different show segment hosts. We wish everybody a wonderful afternoon and have a good time with the News on the Flip Side. You've been listening to United Public Radio Network on 105.3 FM in Pasquotank, Mississippi, and 107.7 FM in beautiful downtown New Orleans, Louisiana. And that call-in number for the News on the Flip Side as well is 504-273-7379. Don't forget to call in if they touch on a subject or topic that you have something to say about and voice your opinion with Joe and Stephanie. Thanks again, Andy, for joining me. Enjoy that next deep conscious
before
breath
that's coming up for you.
New territories. Once you move beyond.
Latte